Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's One Last Thing episode. The co-host this week is Sean Asher. Sean, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken. I am feeling optimistic today. We're recording on Wednesday. I'm feeling optimistic about our chances that we're going to be playing meaningful football for a few weeks in a row here. So I'm doing well.
Aren't we all? I mean, just the amount of turnaround in optimism and everything is wonderful in this town. Some of the critics of various things have been silenced or at least slightly muted, or maybe they're waiting to talk up again, whatever it might be. Fortunately, and this is one group I really want to shut the hell up, are the Lamar critics. The people who are saying Lamar has been slow rolling his return. Let's finally get those vampires staked and put in their graves this week after he's back and hopefully has a big game. But boy, they're a crowd.
And I don't even understand it, dude. Like, we just won a game. It's a short week. He's coming back. Like, there's other things to talk about. And then the fodder about, like, the disconnect between the Ravens and Lamar. Like, there's some, like, what? This is not middle school. Like, these are grown men. There's conversations happening that none of us are there privy to. And we're, like, on a short week, we're just going to speculate about how toxic their relationship is. Dude, miss me with all that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're gonna talk about something a lot more fun tonight, which is the greatest Ravens backup quarterback performances of all time. And this is in an individual game, and we're discussing this for very obvious reasons because Tyler Huntley just stepped in and had one of the really great performances that you'll see from a backup quarterback, at least in terms of the result of the game, beating a quality opponent. Critical in-season win in terms of the juncture and whatnot. So I imagine we'll be talking about him before the end of this, but we're going to do this in reverse countdown order. So we're going to start at the fifth greatest backup quarterback performance ever. Sean, you're going to start with number five, and then I'll give my number five, and we'll do it that way.
Yeah, and to start the audience with, this wasn't, for me, it wasn't like the greatest per se. It was like my favorite, you know, and like what I remember and like how impactful it was for the season. So like, there's arguments to be made, and please come at me with when you find out where my list is, because I'm all for that discussion on X for sure.
We can have it on X. You can also post directly to the website if you want to. There on the podcast page, you can make comments. But wherever you want to comment, we're happy to field it on this. And this is definitely a very open-ended topic in terms of what kind of characteristics you want to grade on.
Yeah. So my number five was Trent Dilfer in 2000, taking over and, you know, becoming the guy. His second start after taking over for Banks and ended the Ravens ended the Ravens 20 quarter TD drought and had 3 TD passes and a 27-7 win over Cincinnati. It was bleak, man. It was really bleak. And him taking over, like, all of a sudden things were clicking, you know? So that's my number five for sure.
Yeah, but it's my number four. Now that's on 11/5/2000. Dilfer had 3 great games that year, and he was the backup quarterback. So one of the standards I used, and Sean, if you use something different, that's okay. But the standard I used was to say that if the player was the starting quarterback to begin the year, then he's not a backup quarterback. But if he didn't start the year as the starting quarterback, then he can have a backup role. So there's some guys who were starters at one point on my list who were backups when they had their big game. And Trent Dilfer, there's never a question about that. He was only a backup ever for the Ravens. He came in to replace Tony Banks midway through 2000, lost his first start. Well, he lost his first game in relief with that. That doesn't affect his record. Then he lost his first start. I think that was against the Titans, 14-6. And then he won all of his remaining 11 games, beginning with this 27-7 win over Cincinnati. Had a 117.8 rating in the game. It was his only one over 100 the whole regular season. And in the playoffs, I think you could point to either the Denver AFC wildcard game, where he only threw in the teens in total passing attempts in the game, or you could look at Super Bowl 35 and say that, you know, he's the one who really got the offense started with the long pass to Stokely. He didn't have any turnovers in the 5-0 turnover domination the Ravens had, and that certainly was the biggest single factor in them being able to shut the Giants offense down completely. But you could pick any one of those three games for Trent Dilfer for me. But to me, the I didn't want to put all three on the list. I think the 27-7 win over Cincinnati was the biggest one. One other thing about that game, the national media was giving the Ravens unbelievable crap at this time for having a defense but no offense. And this has been a general thing. The Ravens hadn't really found their quarterback yet. And when Brandon Stokely finally scored a touchdown to end the drought, I remember, I think it was Chris Berman was doing the highlights on his show, and he had a confetti layover on the video for the thing. And I'm going, you know, isn't that just a little bit much? You know, you land this on us after. Yeah, it is. It was a big moment. It was great to do this. I don't need a confetti moment. You know, it's indicative of a team that's not, doesn't really belong to be there. And the Ravens certainly proved they more than belong to be there the rest of that season.
Yeah, absolutely. That quieted a lot of doubters.
All right. I'll go to my number five pick. That's Kyle Bowler on 12-17-06. Now, he did not start this game in particular. Now, what I didn't say is he didn't have to start the game if he came in and you played well enough over the period you're in there to be it. But he came in for McNair off the bench, beat the Browns 27-17. This is right after the Ravens had lost a game on a Thursday night at Cincinnati to not clinch the division. And this did clinch the division for the Ravens in the 2006 season. And Kyle Bowler, of all people, came off the bench to start and win the game. In fact, had a quarterback rating of over 100 that year, which is remarkable. I did find in this research for this piece that he was not the only Ravens backup quarterback to have 100 rating for a season, but he did it in this season. He had two TDs, one interception, 112.8 rating in the game. He did not throw another pass for the 2016. He was in another game, but finished with that 104 rating.
Yeah, so Ken, this was my number three. And this is one you can find on YouTube. So I encourage people Sunday, if you don't want to watch other games, Saturday, whatever, like go find this game on YouTube, because it's such an interesting cross section in Ravens history and like the names, the players, the time frame. But also there is one throw in specific, the 77-yard TD to Demetrius Williams in the third quarter. And dude, it was a dot. So like, When everybody is like Kyle Bowler and you like you have the history, like you don't remember much, but you remember he was a bust, like go back, watch that game, look at this one specific throw, and you'll understand what the Ravens saw from him in college, because he had the ability to make these throws. His pressure was coming down on him, tight end missed the block, halfback missed the tip block, and he threw a dot to Demetrius Williams, who had a half a step, and the safety was not prepared for this at all. He thought it was going to be a bad throw. He was playing for an overthrow or an off-target throw, and it was an absolute laser.
Kyle Bowler, certainly a player most of us remember as a guy who could have gone in as the best-looking guy in a bar, had his pick of the women, and yet find the only bowl of peanuts in the entire bar, spill that all over the floor and bloody his nose trying to pick them up. The guy had a penchant for screwing up that was beyond things. His footwork with the center and the left guard were terrible. Some of that was probably offensive line coaching, but what a, you know, a squirrel in the pocket in terms of what he did. He also lost the handle on the football a number of times when there was no contact. It's just weird.
Like, what are you looking at? Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, that was an interesting game. So that was my number three.
Your number four is next, right?
Yeah, number four, Randall Cunningham, baby. Oh, man, 2001. This is back when Jacksonville and Ravens were rivals, and Jacksonville had a squad, bro. And Mark Brunell and McCardell and Jimmy Smith. And this game, Brunell had 306 yards and McCardell had 118. Jimmy Smith had 119. This is 2001 Ravens defense, straight off the Super Bowl, greatest defense in history. And Jacksonville was moving on us. And Randall Cunningham, replacing Gerbach, had two big wins that season. This was the first one, right? Was this the second one?
Yes, this was the first one. The next week he beat the Steelers.
Steelers, yep. So yeah, this was... And it's Randall Cunningham, you know, like he wasn't what he was, but in Baltimore, when he came in for those two games, it was like, damn, this is good to see.
This 40-year-old Randall Cunningham was 2-0 as a Ravens starter. Both of them really big wins. And the 2000 team was incredibly dominant defensively. And more than that, they were this incredible turnover machine that they would regularly get, you know, one to two more turnovers than their opponents. And they ended up with 49 takeaways on the season. Well, the 2001 team was minus two in net takeaways on the season. But Cunningham came in and he got it done in this game, led a comeback to win against Jacksonville. They won some games that year. I think they might have won both Jacksonville games, like really close, like 130-27 on a last second pass and another one 18-17. Like this one, I think they were trailing 17-6 in the fourth quarter. Cunningham brought them back and they won that game. Then the following week, they went to Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh had been virtually unbeatable that season, and Chris Brown missed four field goals, and the Ravens were right back in the division race. And they had a chance. They ended up losing the game in Baltimore later in the year, but that was a pretty sweet win, and that was Cunningham also at the helm that next week. So versus Jacksonville, he had a touchdown, interception, a 91.1 rating. It was a tremendously exciting game. I couldn't bring myself to put it on the top five, but I would agree it's certainly in the top 10, an honorable mention game for me.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your next one?
Well, my number four was Dilfer, so I think we're at a year number three, which we already said, right?
Yep.
Okay, so my number three is Tyler Huntley on 10-26-25. Beat the Bears 30-16. Anybody forgotten already about this? It kept the Ravens' season alive. 116.9 passer rating, one TD, no interceptions. He ran effectively. This is a Bears team that came in with this extraordinary takeaway relationship and with the dominated opponents, and he kept the ball, generally speaking, pretty safe. Now, did put the ball in harm's way twice. One, the ball that should have been intercepted by Byard, and Huntley was actually lucky that it was deflected by Edmonds at the line of scrimmage. And then the second one was actually earlier in the game. He was sacked and almost stripped in the pocket. I have no idea how he held onto that football or how he recovered it. It wasn't even recorded as a fumble in the game book. But that was a you know, potentially dangerous play. Huntley avoided a lot of the things in this game that have dogged him in the past. Really poor pocket presence didn't hurt him too much in this game. Two sacks. The ball was out fairly quickly, but I also felt like the Ravens didn't sacrifice a whole bunch of what they needed to do well to win that game against the Bears, which was take advantage of their really bad cornerbacks. So for me, this Tyler Huntley game comes in at number three all time. And when you hear the top two, I think you'll understand why. But boy, one of them I'd forgotten, but the Tyler Huntley game is for me is right up there in the iconizable ones. So hopefully this is something.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
There's a Ravens museum someday, and they put together exhibits like that, like the greatest performances ever by a backup quarterback. It's got to be a living document, but it would be fun to do that. They have each win kind of in the castle has its own picture, which is a really cool thing to do. But they could do this as well if they wanted to put this around, and the place for this would be at the stadium or maybe in some of the new lounge areas they're creating to have some readable Ravens history on the walls there. I think would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Or in the QB room, right?
They could do that too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that one was first off the list for me. And honestly, it's probably not fair. My list is so subjective, and please at me, I'll defend it. I'll stand on those hills and I'll die on them. If the Ravens somehow sneak into the playoffs, this will probably be number two for me. Like, it'll jump from number six to number two, but it's just, it's so recent, it's hard for me to, and especially because I'm a big nostalgia guy. I love driving down memory lane. So if we get into the playoffs, this will jump up to number two for me. But my actual number two, Anthony Wright, Seattle Seahawks in 2003. The game, this one is on YouTube as well. I'll post the links. Follow me on X. This one is such a good one to go back and watch because it is so much fun. It is a boring game until right before halftime, The Seahawks score a touchdown with like a minute left and then
recover a fumble.
Yeah.
Score again.
Chester Taylor, right?
Sounds right.
He fumbled. They score again right before halftime. All of a sudden, it's now 3-17, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's like 60 seconds ago, it's 3-3. Then it just continues to be a comedy of errors for the Ravens. Absolute travesty. And they get up to, 41-20 something?
41-24 in the fourth quarter with under 7 minutes to go.
Dude, it was brutal. And you can see the Seahawks celebrating. You can see the Ravens are like just trying to make a play to stay, to have some momentum, to keep anything going. And they come all the way back to win that game. It was absolutely incredible game. Highly encourage everyone to go back and watch that one.
I think everybody probably watches games from a given point that they really love to watch the part where the Ravens win. If you want to watch the part where the Ravens win, start at 7 minutes of the fourth quarter. Watch Ed Reed line up for what I believe will be the final punt block of his career. It's the second season. They took him off the punt team, which Belichick says he never would have done, but he blocked Ruins' punt, picked it up, walked into the end zone himself, and that got the Ravens back in the ball game down 10. Then they had an enormous takeaway from Ray Lewis, who stripped the ball from Max Strong. That was after a penalty had given a first down, which was apparently going to end the game. Then the Seahawks get the ball back again after the Ravens complete a fourth and 28 play for a 44-yard gain on a ball tip from Marcus Robinson to the Frank Sanders. A lot of people think Robinson caught the ball, but Sanders, who actually caught the tipped ball and ran out of bounds for a 44-yard gain. Robinson eventually caught a touchdown pass on that drive, his fourth of the game. There's nobody there. Nobody was left among Ravens fans. And when I say that, stadium was probably 40 to 50% full at the end. But because of the concrete around, you really hear it. It was so loud in that stadium. Very similar to what happened to the Ravens in Buffalo earlier this year in week one. The Bills fans were largely gone by the end of that game. And yet it was a very loud stadium because you can really hear people when it's like that. So we've had our game that was like that incredible loss to Buffalo. And I've got to feel the Seahawks felt the same way. The final 2 minutes of the game, there was a clock stoppage error by the officials, which gave the Ravens an extra 30 seconds. And they were livid about it, but Mike Holmgren didn't, really, there's nothing to do. And he actually caught it a play late. And then the Ravens got the ball back with about 35, 40 seconds to go. Long pass interference penalty set up the game tying field goal. Then in overtime, they were able to win it. So much in the way of visual memories that I still have from that game. It was one of my favorite days of football in history. Anthony Wright, that game, not only did he have the four touchdown passes, but his first child was born that night. And one of the things, if you can find it, look up Anthony Wright's post-game locker room speech from that game. It's absolutely incomprehensible. And I love it, but it's absolutely incomprehensible. He's just he's kind of choking on his own words. He can't even say it, it's great to watch a player get super emotional after a big win like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, dude, it was such an awesome game to relive and rewatch because it was like you're seeing Ravens that just don't do – it's like for that era, you don't see this Ravens team doing this stuff. You don't see these mistakes. You don't see blown coverages. You don't see Chris McAllister getting cooked, dude. Like that just didn't happen. And they're like, what is this? And then all of a sudden, 7 minutes left in the game, Ravens come alive, and it's like defense steps up, plays defense again, and Ravens offense starts playing wild. It was such a great game. I'll have the link on X for sure.
All right. That was my number two also. So what are your number one, which might be also my number one. We'll see.
I doubt it, man. Mine's so petty. It's 2007, bro. End of the season, beating the Steelers. And, like, we had nothing to play for. We had absolutely nothing. We're out. Season's toast. They're not playing. Troy Polamalu, Hines Ward's not playing. A couple other players are not playing. There's nothing. And Troy Smith, God, I love Troy Smith, man. Like, if the dude was 5 inches taller, I'm convinced we would have had him as our quarterback for 10 years, you know. But nothing to play for. One TD, 90.2 Steelers ratings. This is Billick's last game, Ogden's last game. And, dude, we were at a 9-game losing streak. Like, there was absolutely nothing to be optimistic for or look forward to at the end of the season. But we, like, and it didn't, like, the Steelers didn't have that much to play for. I guess there was some seeding scenario on the line. But, like, to just beat Steelers at the end of that, like, okay. It was the end of a chapter in Ravens history as well. And to beat the Steelers to close that chapter made me happy. It made me very happy. Next year, we hire Harbaugh, draft Joe Flacco. Ray Rice was the same draft, right?
Yep. Flacco and Rice. Yep.
I mean, and it, like, to just shut that miserable chapter with beating Steelers makes me happy.
All right. Well, fair enough. And this was, you know, a lot of ways during this long losing streak is when Bisciotti made the decision that he's probably going to have to fire Billick at the end of that year. Ravens in 2007. It was an injury-riddled season. It was very much akin to 21, 2015, 2005. You guys probably heard me say this that on recent shows. And really, to a degree, 2025. Everybody, quote-unquote, is healthy again, except they don't have Ardarius Washington. They don't have Tavius Robinson. They don't have Nnamdi Madubuike. So everybody is healthy, though, otherwise on the roster. It's just is kind of a...
Except three very key impact
defenders. Yes. Anyway, I like that game. That's off my list. It might or might not be in my top 10 just because the Ravens didn't have anything riding on it. And if you want to say it closed out the year, I kind of get that from a historical transitional standpoint, but a nice win to send Billick out with. He lost the finale to the Bengals the following week. And so this was his last win as a Ravens coach too.
Yep.
All right. My number one is one that I'd actually forgotten when I talked about this on the offense show, but Tony Banks on 12/5/99. Okay. 1999. Who started the Ravens season at quarterback? Oh, it wasn't Jim Harbaugh. It wasn't Vinny Testaverde. It wasn't Eric Zier. It wasn't, you know, Tony Banks. It was Scott Mitchell, the water buffalo. It was out there for two games, lost them both, and probably cost the Ravens a playoff spot in the process. But Banks led the Ravens to what still is one of their greatest wins, a 41-14 win over Tennessee, one of the most dominant they've ever had. And it was who they beat was a big part of that, because the Titans would go on to lose Super Bowl 34 by a yard on the tackle by Mike Jones tackling Dyson. So very impressive win over the Titans. That started a 4-game winning streak, which was the beginning of the dynasty we know today. So a lot of the Ravens' own PR materials, the media guide and a lot of the other things they produce and whatnot, always talk in terms of two eras, since 2000 or since 2008, if they want to start talk about just the Harbaugh era. They almost never talk about the whole franchise history. The truth of the matter is even the first 4 years had shades of gray involved, and the 99 season was the point, this 4-game winning streak, where the dynasty really emerged. I came into 2000 as an incredibly optimistic fan about what the Ravens' chances were to make the playoffs, even to make a Super Bowl run, because they had such a great run down the stretch in 99. In fact, they still had a chance to make the playoffs after shutting out Cincinnati in week, it would have been the next to last week of the season, but at 4 p.m. they were eliminated. So they didn't have a chance in week 17. So they were playing, or whatever the last week of the season was, they were playing for a winning record, and then they got beat by New England 20-3. And what, by the way, also was New England emerging in terms of being a high quality team there with Belichick. It's actually, that was Carroll's, I think it was Carroll's last game at the helm for New England. Mm-hmm. So, yep. But anyway, Tony Banks, 18 of 31 for 332, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 134.7 passer rating. To me, that is the single greatest performance by a backup quarterback in Ravens history. Is done, obviously, against a very good team It's kind of forgotten in Ravens history. I'd forgotten it myself when we're talking about where Tyler Huntley fits in, but it would still be number one on my list.
That makes sense. Definitely makes sense. It's such an interesting cross section too, like you're pointing to, the where it's where Ravens really can start turning the tides and start being, I mean, known as the Ravens, right? And then it's also very interesting that it just happens to coincide with Belichick. That's fascinating for sure. But yeah, I understand that being your number one. Mine's way more petty, man. You know me.
All right. Well, Sean, always a pleasure doing this show with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
I am on the Twitter machine at @BMORE_sky, SKY _ high, HIGH. Find me there. Find the links to the games. I'll post them and you guys can go relive some of this fun with us.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss on One Last Thing, it's made for interesting little topics. Some of that could be historical. Some of it can be, hey, I'd like to see if the Ravens could do this schematically this year. What do you guys think about it? We might turn that into a whole episode. We're interested to hear from you. It's not like we struggle to come up with episode ideas ourselves, but I think it's always interesting if we involve the fans. Hit us up. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you're one of the people who would like to hear a topic but is too shy to come on yourself, hey, we'll talk about it without you if that's the way you'd prefer it to be. But I always am happy to entertain folks with Film Study Short and have people come on to discuss their own ideas. And there will be an opportunity to do that coming up after the Miami game, because we'll have kind of a mini bye week and a couple extra days to do a short episode in there. Hit me up anyway, and I'll talk to you then. For Sean Asher, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next time on One Last Thing.